The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Norwegian Cruise Line invites you to experience more in the Caribbean, Alaska, Europe, and beyond. For a limited time, get 50% off all cruises and enjoy NCL's all-new More at Sea cruising package, including unlimited open bar, specialty dining, and more. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Offer ends soon. Norwegian Cruise Line, ships registry the Bahamas and USA. Restrictions apply.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
More than 60% of doctors are frequently burnt out and exhausted, while over half say they feel disillusioned or disengaged at work. That's according to a new survey carried out by the Medical Protection Society. One doctor is quoted as saying, "Soon we won't have any doctors left." Now, to talk about this and more, we're joined by Dr. Chris Luke, columnist, host of the Irish Medical Lives podcast and retired consultant in emergency medicine. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this survey will be no surprise to you, I think.
Absolutely not. I'm afraid old people like me within the profession have been talking about burnout for the past 25 years. I mean, I have written umpteen letters and been on the radio. I've spoken to you umpteen times about it. And essentially, I suppose the way to think about it is that there's a runaway inflation. Many people come into work in, for example, emergency departments don't understand that there's an inherent 4% inflation rate in the numbers of people attending A&E departments all around these islands. And that was very stable for the past 20, 30 years. But since the pandemic, the inflation in terms of patient numbers and all the attendant workload is more like 25 to 30%. You know, we've seen increases of hundreds of people per day coming to departments like Cork University Hospital or the Royal Victoria and so on. And that, of course, applies across the board in the health services. A relentless increase in the number of, in the amount of work, in the demand. And unfortunately, there's a similar 4% incremental reduction in the numbers of doctors within the workforce every year.
So we have a compounding problem, more patients and fewer doctors. Is the problem principally confined to EDs, or when you get into the normal run of hospital medicine where people are being treated for, you know, a broken toe, whatever it might be, or an operation on the knee, is it better? Is it more relaxed?
My experience would say yes. I mean, basically, back in the 90s, I used to quip that, you know, emergency medicine was at the cutting edge of awfulness and in misery. That has, I'm afraid, that I don't mean to be flippant, and I'm certainly not flippant now. But black humour, of course, is a factor in coping. Now, I think many general practitioners would share that kind of sense of being overwhelmed. You'd have similar experiences in the intensive care units. And, of course, we saw a lot of that in the English-speaking world during the pandemic. We saw the absolute exhaustion and the despair caused by the deaths of so many patients within their units on the part of intensivists. So, obviously, there is a continuum. And the more, if you're at the sharp end of healthcare, you're more likely to experience the mismatch between a surging demand and your capacity as a human being and in terms of your resources to cope. And that, of course, is the ultimate underlying issue with burnout. It's a mismatch between the capacity and the demand.
And burnout actually means that what you used to be able to do fairly comfortably, burnout means that doing exactly the same as you tried to do before just becomes so much more difficult.
Yeah, I compare burnout with, burnout is actually defined by the WHO as essentially an occupational hazard. It's a condition of under-resourcing and overwork. So it's not just in emergency departments or the health system. Perhaps the most neglected victims of burnout, of course, are those hundreds of thousands of carers in our society who look after relatives who are disabled or unable to cope on their own. Of course, thereby saving the state and the health system a great deal of money and time, of course. So burnout is basically, it's not stress. It is the consequence of daily, repeated, recurrent stress that is essentially growing and it's unmanaged. And I compare the result with what I call spiritual anemia. And basically, if you have a small peptic ulcer, you're prone to perhaps bleeding a little bit from it every few days or every few weeks. If you have a similar spiritual anemia, you're basically hemorrhaging your zest for life, your joie de vivre, your intrinsic levels of enthusiasm and energy, and it's a bit like bankruptcies. It happens very, very slowly, and then suddenly at the end, when you kind of tip into burnout. And burnout, it involves a collapse in confidence. It involves a collapse in your belief to do things, in your literally your ability to see people or to do work or to see hope. You become despondent, and you will start to procrastinate. You may turn to the drink or drugs, and of course, possibly the most painful thing of all is difficulty in your relationships, both at work, obviously, but also at home.
Now, looking at the way the problem might have been addressed, the idea of having small injuries clinics and so on to keep people out of the ED, encouraging people to go to their GPs instead of going straight to the ED. But then the GPs are saying there aren't enough of us, we're not taking on any more patients, that resource may not be available. And I'm just wondering, since we throw so much money at the health system, what is it about the way we organise ourselves that makes it pretty dysfunctional?
That's an extraordinarily difficult question to answer. I mean, you're basically right to suggest that there are many, many answers and there are many, many solutions, and we're aware of most of them. I mean, if you look at the Irish Association for Emergency Medicine's website, you'll see an awareness of almost everything that's going on in the English-speaking world in terms of innovation and things that work and empirical evidence and so forth. So we know that the local injury units are hugely popular and extremely effective, but we haven't resourced them enough to be open, say, 24/7, but certainly 6-7 days a week, and to gradually extend the hours. And similarly, we need to have far more rapid access to imaging, to scans, to x-rays, to ultrasound for general practitioners. We need more, rapid access, outpatient facilities for specialist opinions, whether it be in ophthalmology or orthopedics. We need far more clinics run remotely. For example, in West Cork, we have clinics that are either run by orthopedic physio specialists or that are actually run remotely from the centre using telemedicine. So there are, innumerable solutions that we just have to get on with and deliver. And I'm afraid that comes down to a mixture of leadership and vision.
And that may be in deficit. But just talking about the GPs, because there's been a kind of collectivisation of GPs. Many GP practices have a number of GPs. And one would have thought that might allow them to offer a more comprehensive service. For example, when people might only be free to see a GP at the weekend, but they can't because the GPs don't open. So they're going to be falling back on some other care services that the GPs pay to cover for their absence. And I'm just wondering, is it not possible with a practice with 4, 5, 6 doctors that they can't offer a better service to the public and keep more people out of the EDs?
Well, I mean, Pat, I'd be loath to really speak on behalf of the general practitioners. I mean, I'm heading up to my GP surgery shortly to get a vaccination, and that vaccination will be provided by the practice nurse. And the particular practice I attend, is very modern and has all sorts of facilities and services like physiotherapy, counsellors, practice nurses and a pharmacy. So many GP practices are very modern and very impressive.
But is your facility open on a Saturday?
It is open, and they certainly opened 7 days a week during the pandemic. But I would say two things. One is that, you know, just because the surgeries are closed doesn't mean that they're not scanning and scrutinising results and sending off referral letters and all sorts. So a huge amount of work goes on, you know, behind closed doors once the doors close. And secondly, emergency medicine in many respects has been a victim of its own success. I mean, as it has accelerated and turbocharged and streamlined the care of things like stroke and chest pain and diabetic crises and drugs and homelessness, more and more people tend to just go straight to the emergency department. So, you know, and they don't go to the primary care services. So it's a complicated debate, and I'm a bit wary of offering any sort of significant critique. I'll just say one last thing. You know, I have a lot of friends who are my age in general practice, and they are working unbelievably hard, and they are understandably totally burnt out because there are so few of them. They can't even retire because there's no one to take over the practice. They can't take holidays more than 2 or 3 or 4 days a year because there's such a shortage of locums and other GPs. And of course, many of them, as you know, you'll have heard this many times, many GPs in Ireland, many of the old middle-aged male variety are about to retire, or are retiring or trying to retire in the next year or two or three. So I worry that the situation may get slightly worse before it gets better. But as I say, there are many, many solutions, and we just need more leadership and more vision.
And that's the question. What is the Department of Health doing? I mean, the HSE has its particular mandate, but in terms of future-proofing the health service, that's the job, I would think, of the Minister and the Department of Health. You know, when you're looking at policies and strategies more broadly than the HSE can do.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'm afraid that, well, first of all, having spent 14 years in the NHS, and I tend to track both the Irish and the British health systems just to see, compare and contrast, and they have all the same problems that we do in terms of, for example, manpower, overwhelmed emergency departments, the shrinking, shriveling general practice cohort, and so forth. It seems to me that on both sides of the Irish Sea, you've had a lamentable failure of manpower planning over the last 30, 40 years. It compares with the bedstock planning, you know, where we still have fewer beds in the Republic, in hospitals and so forth, than we did in 1991 or two or thereabouts. So there's been a failure at the highest level in terms of strategic thinking and planning, or realistic planning. For example, you know, we have 2 million more people-ish in the Republic than we had in 1990, and we have fewer hospital beds, which illustrates a woeful failure to anticipate the accompanying features of a growing population.
Now, the question of the far-off hills, and there are Australian hills in the main, being much more green, how much better is it in Australia?
Well, I have worked in Australia, and I have visited Australia in the recent past, there's no doubt. I mean, I visited one very good friend who had worked both in Cork and in the Melbourne area, and his emergency department was hugely impressive. They had a huge staff room with reclining chairs, ultra, you know, microwaves, TVs. They even had an aquarium with fish in it. In other words, catering for the physical, human, social, spiritual needs of the staff as well as the patients. The facilities within the department were astonishing. They had amazing IT, which was it would seem to be about 15, 20 years ahead of what we have in these islands. And of course, I should say, Pat, when I worked back in Australia in the late 80s, I was based at the Royal Infirmary of Edinburgh, which at that stage was regarded as one of the prestigious hospitals in the whole of the UK in terms of accident emergency medicine. But when I went to a hospital in the Brisbane area, they seemed, again, in terms of facilities, buildings and so on, they were at least 15 to 20 years ahead of what we had in the UK. So ultimately, the Aussies spend more money on their facilities. Their doctors, I mean, I'd say a third to 40% of our doctors are working over 45, 50 hours. In other words, beyond the European prescribed limit, whereas in Australia, the vast majority seem to work less than 50 hours, and they have, you know, what we would call swanky facilities. They have very good rates of pay, and of course, they have this lifestyle with which it's hard to compete with. So, You know, I've been muttering about the exodus to Australia, and my own heartfelt desire is that our graduates would leave it for a year or two before they go to Australia, because that's the way it was for my generation. We all went abroad as we had to, and as we should do in our third or fourth year after qualifying. Whereas now, the key change, the sea change, was the fact that our youngsters are going after their first year in the hospitals. And that's been the big change. And I think that's where I'd like to try to see some reversal. I mean, I'd like to see some sort of incentivization.
I have a whole pile of comments here, but I want to put one to you. Pat, you are both missing the point. The burnout that is reported is due to the structure and the ever-increasing bureaucracy, often labelled the quality agenda. Same in policing, teaching, etc. Treating patients is the enjoyable aspect of medicine. It's all the other nonsense that prevents doctors doing what they were trained to do and causes the strain. The requirement to oversee poorly trained colleagues merely adds to the frustration and the burnout. That's from Cahill in Rathmines.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I spent an awful lot of my time as a consultant in emergency medicine on both sides of the IRCs, popping over to HR offices to try and interview people by phone, by video or in person, to try and fill in shifts, fill in gaps, paying vast amounts of money to locums who are flying in from London to Cork or coming up from, you know, Birmingham to Liverpool, endlessly trying to fill through shifts. So I know all about, trying to manage colleagues or, you know, locums that I don't know. An unstable workforce is very, very, difficult for morale. And it's very difficult to get a cohesive team going when you're constantly unsure who's going to be actually working with you or they know the department or the hospital. And there is a vast amount of stuff that should not be being done by healthcare professionals, like data capture, you know, filling in forms, all that sort of stuff should be done. Healthcare professionals should be laying hands on patients, talking to them, you know, having the time to talk to them, having proper, dignified, respectful conversations and so on, rather than endlessly filling in forms, be it on paper or on computers.
Dr. Chris Luke, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. All right, time for this.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Norwegian Cruise Line invites you to experience more in the Caribbean, Alaska, Europe, and beyond. For a limited time, get 50% off all cruises and enjoy NCL's all-new More at Sea cruising package, including unlimited open bar, specialty dining, and more. Visit ncl.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Offer ends soon. Norwegian Cruise Line. Ships registry the Bahamas and USA. Restrictions apply.